Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net's been going strong for over 44 years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all sit in front of our radios and chat with each other and try to explain things or learn from each other or entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. for our Father's Day edition of the Limark Technical Net. So let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual links. If you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. That would be for mailbag questions, for TechNet puzzle suggestions, to volunteer to do a short discussion of some technology that made it into the news that you're aware of and can teach us something about, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at a space or NASA-related story, you could reach him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also have a link page. Every week I cut and paste things that I find of interest. Sometimes it's YouTube videos, sometimes it's articles, or sometimes it's pretty pictures. And I put it up on my link page, and it stays there pretty much forever, but it's at the top of it every week, and I refresh it with a new selection and scroll. You can scroll down to see the old stuff. That's available by simply typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room that's available for people to kind of sideswipe, discuss things off to the side, or if you can't quite make it onto the repeater, I read them. So you get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the Internet. A surprising number of people use it every Sunday night. Usually it peaks around 7 or 8 people. You get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And I keep that stream alive the rest of the week so that if you want to hear what's going on in Glen Oaks, but you don't have a radio nearby, but you have an Internet source, you can just type into your browser, once again, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the audio feed for the Glen Oaks repeater throughout the week. We try and keep it live 24/7. Occasionally, we take it down for maintenance, and sometimes strange things happen, but for the most part, it's you should be able to find it. Let's see. In addition, I always like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and he has archived the Limark Technical Net. His archives go as far back as September of 2006. So if you want to avail yourself of the wisdom of some clever guys who passed through, you know, some of them have moved away to other parts of the country, and others, unfortunately, have become silent keys. But their wisdom lives on audio files that you could download and listen to your heart's content. So consider doing that. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what you got planned. Okay. There's not really that much on artificial intelligence this week, thank God. You know, OpenAI has incremented their latest, greatest version of ChatGPT. I think it's 3.0 or something, Pro or Plus or some such. You know, it costs way too much money for anyone out there to really play around with it, as far as I know. It's hundreds of dollars to have access to this. And it's a very slow thinking. It's supposed to be very smart, but I've been reading articles about how AI is unfortunately getting too smart for its own good, and it's getting, you know, over its own skis, as the saying goes. So, again, I'm not quite sure if artificial intelligence is what some of the guys trying to make $1 trillion out of it want us to believe. We'll see. Time will tell. Nevertheless, nothing much else to say about artificial intelligence this week. So we'll have a regular vanilla edition. I will ask for questions and comments and topics from the crowd. Please try and make the first few amateur radio related, since we are an amateur radio repeater. We're all hams. But as always, if you have any questions of a science or a technology-based topic, feel free to ask it, and I will do my best to comment as well as I can, and if not a great deal of information, at least point you towards readily available reference sources. So that should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m. I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish everyone well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If the laws of physics continue to work the way they're supposed to, and my shack works the way it's supposed to, and the repeater works the way it's supposed to, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times. Usually the average is about two. And usually, thankfully, it's towards the end of the night. A lot of times when Paul is already doing his SpaceNet report, so you never notice that I'm reconnecting to All-Star. Anyway, that's our plan for tonight, fellows. So let the festivities begin. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or not, and let's see what we got.
And to XCN.
KN0AMI, KN0AMI,
Iraqi. W2BZ.
Okay, KN0EMI and Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down?
That was me, Wesley, at the beginning of it.
Yeah, I already said that I recognized you before KN0EMI and W2BZ checked in.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? KN0EMI, what's your first name again?
KN0AMI, the first name is Niraj, N-E-R-A-J, Niraj.
Okay, very good. Wes, do you mind if I take Niraj and Rich first?
Absolutely. Go ahead, please.
Okay, Niraj, what do you got for tonight?
I just got a question for the TechNet. So I just got my ham radio license last month, and, looking into learning more about the fundamentals of how a receiver works, actually. So I was going through the ARRL handbook, and they have a chapter on receiver design techniques, and it does get into a bit of detail on the actual how the receivers work. I was just wondering if there's a better way to learn this topic. I'm not really that... I'm not an electrical engineer, so my understanding, I would like to dumb things down. I'd like to read those Four Dummies books. Is there, an easier way to digest how, receivers work and how to at least get started in learning about electronics?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different levels, and by the way, unfortunately, I don't know how old your handbook is, but there are two significantly different types of receivers. There are discrete component receivers, and then there are, they came up around 20 years ago, and they've basically sort of taken over modern design, software-defined radios. In one, you have a front end that does the radio wave amplification, and then you have an intermediate frequency stage where it mixes with a local oscillator and it's filtered, and then finally it's sent off to a detector stage and then an amplifier stage. Software-defined radios are significantly different. They take the same amplified signal on the front end, and then they immediately digitize it to ones and zeros, and then kind of put it into basically the same type of thing as a computer, and just manipulates the bits to accomplish the same thing. But that's neither here nor there for your question. I would suggest that you just kind of take the inexpensive approach rather than buy a radio for dummies and Google concepts. You go to Wikipedia, you go to, there's a lot of amateur radio-based literature websites, and most of them, especially, you can judge them by the number of pages that they're using to take up the subject, compress the subject probably to the level that you would prefer, where there's some nice pictures and descriptive terms, but they don't really bother you with the nitty and the gritty.
I do have some equipment. I did purchase a 200 megahertz oscilloscope a couple of years ago. I haven't really used it. I just took it out of the storage and I'm starting to use it. I did buy like an assorted collection of transistors, you know, like discrete transistors. I pretty much have the entire collection. I researched all the different types of transistors I can get, and I have all the brands. I have all the models. I do have other components like inductors and capacitors. So I was trying to figure out how I can practically start, you know, testing all of this stuff. So I was looking for like resources. And I am looking into analog radios, not SDR, so analog. Over to you.
Okay, whatever floats your boat. If you're looking into how to test, again, your best asset is the internet. Occasionally you bump into people who are having delusions and they give you bad advice, but overall they give you decent advice. Depending upon the component, there are actual electrical testing devices that are designed to test different types of transistors, bipolar, MOSFETs, diodes and all kinds of things, and give you whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Certainly with more discrete components, there are inductor and capacitor testers, and you could measure those. I'm curious, what do you plan to do with all the components? People who kind of build their own stuff are unfortunately few and far between. Most people buy things that are store-bought. Occasionally, people will buy kits and assemble them and get some pleasure out of that. But there's very few who just kind of design their own circuits and put them together. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to get Popular Electronics. All those magazines are unfortunately long gone. And they would give you schematics and designs, and you could get your components and wire them together in some form, and you could build little interesting gadgets and such. The source for that is kind of small these days. So I'm a little curious what your intention are with your discrete components. You planning to build something interesting?
Sort of. Actually, back in the day we had those Radio Shack 150-in-1 or, those component kits that you put together. I was looking on recreating that experience for myself, but in the process, I was also looking at maybe the possibility of maybe putting my own kits together, you know, so I can actually turn this into sort of like a business where I can start selling these kits online as well. But before I do that, I actually have to, you know, put stuff together, get a manual together, so, you know, it could be something that someone would want to sort of recreate. The eventual goal would be to have whoever uses those kits would start understanding, you know, how the radios actually work from the component level. But, you know, that's the long-term goal. But I just want to personally myself understand how these things work. So that's over.
Okay, that's an impressive motivation. There's not a lot of money to be made in amateur radio, unfortunately. I've talked to more than a few retailers and guys that work for manufacturers, and it's practically a labor of love. If you're going to kind of go down that road, though, my thought is that you probably need much more than a superficial understanding of how analog radios sort of work, because you have to select the discrete component. You have to figure out what the value for the component is, what the rating for the component is, what the tolerance for the component is. So it entails a great deal more knowledge about radio circuits than you can kind of get in an overview. I mean, most people in this hobby kind of stop at the overview because they're not building their own radios, but apparently you're planning to do that. So I'm a little bit confused about your long-term goals don't seem to match your short-term needs, unless I got something wrong.
Comment?
Yes, Wesley?
Enter extreme.
So what I think is a duet. Absolute jewel. And I remember myself when I was young, I started to play with the elements at 9 years old. And with help of my father, I built my first transceiver, transmitter, not transceiver. So I love that. And it doesn't matter if he's going to make money on it or not. Wow. Knowing helps and opens up the door to any activity or any product. Now, there are plenty of things that could be done if somebody wants understanding of antenna, which is very simple stuff. It requires only to learn it and add to it some mechanical skills, and eventually some simple machinery. We could try to make any competition to guys selling antennas, but it will be always American-made. But anyhow, the first topic that I'm going to discuss will be about the microscope after when is my time. It's going to start about the square wave. But I'm going to also mention about the microscope, so stay with us. Dr. Ray, back to you.
Okay. So anyway, I commend your motivation. Most people are kind of, I don't know, I guess I'll just talk to someone on the radio. So I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. I get the feeling that if you're really interested in basically designing your own electrical circuits, you're going to need somewhat more information than an overview will provide you. You know, I mean, like I mentioned that the first stage of most receivers is a low-noise, high-gain RF amplifier. It boosts the signal that the antenna supplies. But that doesn't really tell you how to do that. You know, what's the best amplification component? What type of a transistor should you use? Or should you use something that's a little bit more sophisticated, an integrated circuit, and such? So I'm not quite sure what really ultimately I would suggest that you do. Again, because your long-term goals will probably require you to understand a lot more about how an analog radio works.
I think the AM band amplitude modulation mode is a bit simpler. I remember when I was younger, I built a very simple crystal radio that didn't even use a battery, and basically I was able to listen to a very faint signal. I think it was a kit that I put together. I was able to listen to a very faint AM signal, and it only used a handful of components, like a germanium diode, and that was basically it, and there was like a coil. So I was thinking about making a very simple AM receiver to begin with, and then build it up from there. But I don't want to take up this TechNet just for myself. If you guys want to continue with your other topics, I'm fine with that. Thanks for the tip. KN0AMI.
Well, yeah, I mean, we usually have lots of time here, so don't necessarily worry that you're taking up our precious time. I'm sure if I got a show of hands on the net, we all pretty much had crystal radio sets. That's almost a given if we were old enough, I had a crystal, but crystals are incredibly simple and very limited. On a good day, you'll pick up a local high-powered broadcast amplitude modulated signal. You're not going to pick up HF signals that hams are transmitting. At least I never heard of anyone who was able to, unless they lived next door to a ham at the time. That's a very, very limited design. It doesn't even have a power supply. It's fun, and when you're a little kid, it's amazing to be able to hear anything come out of a unpowered device that's just basically running on an antenna wire. But again, if you're planning to kind of upgrade beyond that, there's a big jump between a crystal radio AM set and anything that would work for any amateur radio operator. You're going to need an actual power supply. You're going to need amplification. The crystal sets have no real amplification. They simply depend upon components like earpieces are usually very high impedance piezoelectric crystals that run very efficiently. So very little voltage reaching that set can give you reasonable sounds coming into your ear. So I certainly wish you luck. I'm sure if there's a nice comfortable gradient going from crystal radio sets to a regular, analog radio device. But I certainly wish you luck, and you know where we are, and we're available every Sunday night after 8 p.m.
Thanks for the comments. KN0AMI, over to you.
So, for coming here and working with us and asking questions. That's what drives this place. And I hope you'll join us again in future Sunday nights. Rich, what do you got up for us tonight?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. To the gentleman who was just asking about how to learn, YouTube, I'll say it again, YouTube, if there's anything you can think of, it is now on YouTube. So if you want to learn how to build, how to use an oscilloscope, just go, how to use an oscilloscope, how do I use an oscilloscope on YouTube, and you'll have 300 different videos you can watch on YouTube, anything you want. What you need to learn is RF, radio frequency. You need to learn radio frequency electronics, because that's basically what you're talking about, and you can Google that not Google it, but do a search on YouTube for that, and you'll get 100 different videos. So whenever I need to learn anything in 2025, the first place I go to is YouTube. And they go from simple to very, very, very detailed videos on how to learn any subject you want. So, that's what I suggest there. Now to my topic, I just spent an hour with my new, let me let it drop a second. I just spent an hour with my Rig Experts antenna analyzer and my 25-foot whip. And what's very disappointing is that I get my lowest SWR readings without the one-to-one RF choke in the line. So my first question is, why do you think that is? Go ahead, Roy.
I think we kind of touched on this a couple of weeks ago. Most likely because your antenna is using the transmission line as a counterpoise, and it's improving its impedance match accordingly. And when you put the choke limits the extent of your transmission line acting as a counterpoise and shifts your resonance and such.
Yeah, but is it bad practice not to use a choke, or could I use just a whip going into the radio?
It's not inherently bad practice to not use a choke. The primary reason for using the choke is to improve the chance of RF not getting into your shack. So if you are using an antenna system and it doesn't have an RF choke, but it's not causing you any problems, you're not getting any RF in the shack, the computer isn't hiccuping, the garage door isn't opening and closing, there's nothing inherently terrible about not choking it. Because in your particular case, you're just not getting enough common mode to warrant choking it.
What about, it's not only, RF in the shack, or in the house, it's also about noise, right? So would I experience less noise with a choke?
Not necessarily. You can't really inherently block external RF to a great degree. It kind of depends on how bad it is and how local it is. If you have an RF source nearby that's somehow getting into your transmission line, then choking your transmission line will improve that type of noise. But there's a lot of noises that enter your antenna system that don't operate in common mode current, and chokes will only affect common mode currents. If you have a noise that's generated in such a way that it's going down your antenna in differential mode, the RF choke won't touch it.
Yeah, I don't know if a whip generates, I don't know, maybe in this instance, and this is all for portable, outside use, in this instance, maybe the additional counterpoise of the coax is a good thing. Could it be, Roy?
Yes, that's what I was saying before. Every antenna is different, and even though you could look it up in the book, that the average one works in familiar ways, it's very dependent upon all kinds of variables, including the topology of your environment, how close you are to the ground, what other buildings are nearby, how, if there are any conductive material nearby, and on and on and on it goes. So it just might be, per happenstance, that, that your system without the choke, the counterpoise provides enough of an additional counterpoise to improve the matching of and resonance of your antenna. As far as noise, you kind of touched on it and then flew away. Telescoping whips can be problematic in the long term. We've talked about it, not in detail, but slightly in the past few months. They tend to corrode because, again, they're separate pieces of metal that slide against each other and make electrical contact. So especially if anyone lives near to the ocean, it's not unusual for the contacts to get corroded, and wind kind of rattles them, and that could produce a lot of random noise in your received signal and give you problems even on the output. So that's why, as I mentioned earlier, whips are not probably the best type of antenna for a base station. For portable, yeah, sure. But, you have to make sure that they stay tarnish-free as best you can.
I've kept it outside since I got it, and I think now I'm ready to go into the woods and try it in the woods. In a couple of parks around here to do parks on the air activations. So I think I'm going to, tomorrow I'm going to take it apart and just leave it in a dry place until I'm ready to go out there and actually do it. Now that I have an easy to use antenna analyzer, and something you could see in sunlight, which you can't with the nano VNA, I think I'm just going to go out into the woods and see if I can get on the air. But I got a 1.2 to 1 match on 17 meters at whatever length it was on the whip. And with the choke in it, it was about a 1.8 to 1. So I don't want to give up that, that extra parameter on the SWR for the sake of maybe needing a choke or not. Anyway, I'll give it a try, but that's basically what my question was, Roy.
AC2GS. Nothing written in stone. Give it a try. See what happens. If it sounds better, do it that way. There are guys who kind of break the so-called rules, and they get away with it. It's because of the variable nature of so many aspects of our hobby that you can't really rely on something in a textbook, because the textbook usually is basing a lot of this in free space. So if you're planning to put up your antenna, halfway between the Earth and Moon, then the textbooks are going to be much more important to you. But since you don't usually operate there, adjust things, change things, check them, and whatever works good, works good. As an aside, John, KD2BD, our New Jersey listener, he hangs out in the chat room. And he wrote regarding W2BZ's regarding W2BZ's antenna, a 25-foot whip operated over an ideal ground counterpoise would be quarter wave resonant at 9.36 megahertz. We don't have any ham bands on 9.36 megahertz. But in previous conversations, you have mentioned, Rich, that although you describe it as a 25-foot whip, you often lower the whip to a shorter length so that it's resonant on one of the amateur radio bands, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there were three I'll have to look at my chart, but I think there are three lanes where the antenna can act as a half wave, an end-fed half wave, not just a quarter wave loop, I mean a quarter wave ground plane. So, yeah, there are all sorts of variations because I can vary the length of the whip. I guess the gentleman who weighed in on the chat thought that it was a fixed 25-foot length. It's not. It goes anywhere from 3 feet, I think, to 25 feet.
Yeah, I think it's because you keep on describing it as a 25-foot whip when it's a maximum 25-foot adjustable whip. Alex, AD2DU, had a comment as well. He wrote he should run an SWR sweep graph on his Q90 and just make tweaks to the antenna and watch how the SWR graph changes. Well, you could do that with the Nano VNA, or you could do that with your new Rig Expert VNA. That's one of the fun things about operating a VNA. You get to see how the changes affect. Sometimes that's very easy. Sometimes if they're elevated antennas, you got to drop them down and make a little adjustment and raise them back up. And it could be somewhat tedious. But, if you're interested in seeing how each little tweak here and there affects the curve, especially it's a good idea to record these curves and, take a look back in the shack at them when you have more time to think about it.
Talking about that, I bought a 40-meter coil, and to my dismay, even though it's the threads on it are, the coupling threads are 3/8 of an inch, they're not by 24 fine. I'm not a hardware guy, but there's a 24 fine type of thread. And so does anybody know of any coupling that I could get that could match the thread that came on it with a 24 fine thread?
Okay, this is an interesting novel question. Anyone out there know how Rich can fix this? Usually, the reality is you have to know specifically what the thread is. You have to, first things first, you got to know if it's metric or not, and then you got to know what it is, because if there are adapters, they're specific to different threads. And if you're doing metric to American, then it's what the thread pitch is on one end to the other end. So there's no kind of waffle room for that. So other than buying yourself some screw gauges so that you could actually measure them and know exactly what these screws are, and then looking to see if there's an adapter for the two types of screw design. I don't know of any other answer. If anyone has another answer, please feel free to hit that push to talk.
I was, since it is 3/8 of an inch, I would assume, and since it is a coil that you insert someplace into an antenna, that the threads on the coil are sort of standard, standardized for antenna work. They're just not the fine thread that I have on my antenna mount. Again, I never heard of 24 fine until I got into this antenna mount. And that's what the threads are, 24, 3/8 of an inch by 24 fine. So I guess I'll have to go to Home Depot. I doubt Home Depot would have it either, because they're not into necessarily into the antenna business, but that's, I guess, my best first stop is to go to Home Depot.
Comment.
Paul?
Yeah? What's your comment?
Ed, K2GJE, 3/8 is the amount. It comes in two sizes, 3/8-24, which is sometimes called fine, and 3/8-16, which is called coarse. There are no other 3/8 threads unless they use the metric thread over.
Okay, but that's my question. What if it's a metric thread? I was going to ask Rich, what's the other connection that he needs the adapter? He's described the one of them, but there's obviously another thread that you need the adapter to fit onto, right?
It's just one female and one male on either side of the coil, right?
And both of them are not 24 fines, I assume.
Correct. They're probably, as Ed just said, they're probably 16, 3/8 by 16 rather than 24.
Okay, so they're coarse. So I guess theoretically, as long as it's not really screwy and there's a metric there someplace, you just need a fine to coarse adapter for the 3/8 screw.
Let me ask Ed, is there a 24 and a 24 fine, or 24 is fine?
Four is fine. There is no other 3/8 thread called fine other than 3/8-24, and the 16 is called coarse. Over.
Okay, so that's probably what I have. I have a 3/8 coarse, and I need a 3/8 fine adapter. So that narrows things down. That makes me a little happier, because I was going crazy with the fine, the 24 fine versus 24. But now that I know that they're the same thing, then I just have to worry about finding a coarse or a 16 to match it up to. But when I get all that and I get this inserted into this antenna, I will be able to tune this antenna to a 40-meter quarter wavelength. And that's what I need to do. But the person who mentioned just, you know, use the SWR function on the G90, he's absolutely right. I mean, I could use that also. It's just a little easier with the Rig Expert Zoom, because of the way they set it up with the graph and the charts, and you can do multiple readings where it'll show you multiple SWRs on about five different bands. So that's helpful too, but it's not as easy as I thought it was going to be. Before I tried it out today, but I'll get there because, you know, after all, it's math, it's mathematics that'll get me to the right SWRs that I want, or close enough where I can use the G90.
Okay, very good. I don't know if this is exactly what you're looking for, but I already found stuff on Amazon, an adapter. I don't know whether it's because you have to make sure whether, you know, for the inside and the outside, one has to be fine, one has to be coarse, and if you get the wrong direction, then it doesn't work very well. But Amazon looks like they sell things like that, and there's a lot of other places like McMaster Car and all kinds of places. So just look for a 3/8 fine to coarse adapter and look them up. Make sure that they're in the right orientation
so that the chorus is either male or female, whatever you particularly need, and the sign is the opposite.
Yes. Well, I need one adapter that has the sign going into the female of the coil, and then the other adapter, a female adapter going into the male side of the coil, and take it from there. God, I hope it's not metric, I'll tell you that. W2PC, thanks, Roy.
You're welcome. I don't think so. Doesn't sound like it's particularly metric. If it was metric, it really wouldn't be 3/8 of an inch, most likely. It would be something else that's more metrically. Paul, you want to say something?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you have Ace Hardware by you, they have a million different drawers by me and all kinds of different threads. Kinds of adapters. I found things in there that, you know, you can sometimes only get online. It's worth a shot anyway. But they're very good. You know, I mean, they come from, they have steel, they have different types of brass, and you know, adapters of all kinds. So you might give it a shot. The 24, you know, that just stands for 24 threads per inch. You know, so that's where they get that.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably have them. You know, it depends what's easier for you. You know, I'm just kind of leaping through Amazon, and you know, they have a lot of different things, and they show you pictures. So you best to stay with the pictures than try and make sense of some of the descriptors that they have here. No, that's an option. You could either have a real building where they keep stuff, or you can go to Amazon and do a little searching, and I'm sure you'll find something.
Yeah, I'll take a look on Amazon now that I know an adapter that I need. Paul, by the way, I got myself a Bengali key. I'm really into CW now. I'm taking a CW Academy course, an intermediate course, and I'm going nuts at CW. So I just wanted to let you know that I got a Bengali HST, a single lever key. I love it. It's like, it's heaven. So, all right, Roy, thanks. Thanks, everybody. W2PC.
AC2GS. Okay, Rich, always a pleasure. Let me tell you, John had some parting advice. John KD2BD, who's in New Jersey, and listens to the net and the response to the chat room. He writes, I would toss together a Pi network and install it at the feed point of the whip and keep it extended to the full length and use the Pi network to establish resonance and perform any necessary impedance matching to the transmission line. And he says, Bob's your uncle. So that certainly is another option.
Yeah, that's a little beyond my pay grade, but the G90 has a renowned antenna tuner in it. Of course, doesn't mean that your efficiency is going to be anything, but it matches anything to anything. And I've already played with it with the whip and adjusting the whip to various lengths. And it seems like at any length it'll match on any band. But of course, that's not the way to do antennas, really. So Roy, the gentleman in New Jersey, I guess he can't get on the air, but explain the Pi network.
It's basically building your own antenna tuner. A Pi network is a impedance transforming circuit. It was very popular in the old days with vacuum tube based transmitters. And because the impedance of vacuum tubes is very high.
So there was always usually a Pi network, and you tuned it just like you tune an antenna tuner. So he's basically just telling you to have your own impedance transforming circuit at the feed point and correct for any mismatch accordingly.
Well, I do have an antenna tuner, but not at the feed point. So I know that's the way to do it, at the feed point, to take all the coax and counterpoises out of the picture. But I can't do that right now. We'll see what happens. I'll come back and report from the forest, from the jungle. I'm going portable. I'm getting out of my house with ham radio and going out into the fresh air and trying to see if I could contact anybody anywhere. And especially, like I said, for POTA activations. But, all right, back to you, Roy.
Okay, good luck, Rich, as always. I know you'll figure something out and get it to work. You might break it afterwards because you want to see what would happen to it, but I'm sure you'll get it to work.
I do have a propensity for pushing the limit over the limit. And I'll never forget with my mag loop, a guy said to me, don't touch it, leave it alone, it's working great. And of course I had to touch it. Now I have an inoperative mag loop, which I'm really pissed off about. But I'll get back to the mag loop after I get this adjustable whip portable station on the air.
Okay, very good, Rich. I have confidence in you. You'll get it to work. I think that was Ed. Rich kind of cut him off. But was that you, Ed, that was trying to talk?
WB2AHK.
Oh, okay, Chet. I mistook the partial audio that I heard for Ed. What do you got to say, Chet?
All right, WB2AHK, Chet. Well, I think modern technology has come to the rescue. I know people like Rich likes to experiment and he wants to learn things, and sometimes you go the wrong way and it doesn't work and you go around in circles. But I think there's quite a amount on the marketplace of automatic antenna tuners that fit right at the feed point. I know MFJ had some. They cost money, but if a ham that has a location where he has trouble getting an antenna up, but he could put up a mask, I think he should save his money and invest in an automatic antenna tuner that is controlled through the coax. In other words, they send the voltage to the coax itself so you don't have to run extra wires to the antenna tuner to power it. And that would really be the best way. You wouldn't have to worry about the feed line length and which transformer to use with your NUM and all that stuff. Just save your onions and buy an automatic antenna tuner that'll work at the feed point, and you're all set. Any band you want, the damn thing will load up, and you're all set.
Okay, Chet. It sort of depends on the manufacturer, how robust the auto tuner is. You know, Japanese auto tuners, lots of luck for matching anything greater than 3-to-1. Most Americans tuners are much more robust. You can get 10-to-1 tuning. I don't know if I would not put an UNUN on an NFED halfway. I think that's asking a heck of a lot from even a decent antenna tuner. But in Rich's situation, he's not operating at base. He's operating in a park. And, you know, he's right next to the antenna, I would assume. So, as you mentioned, weather-shielded auto-tuning antenna tuners get a little on the pricey side. So, you know, I can understand where it would just be easier for him to turn the dial next to the antenna feed point rather than invest in hundreds of dollars worth of auto tutor. You know, I think he kind of voiced the fact that, you know, he's just not prepared to pull around an antenna tuner along with the rest of his kit.
No, I'm not. I already have about $550. About $600 invested in the portable setup. So I'll just have to rely on the internal antenna tuner of the Zygu G90.
Okay, so you know, you're testing?
Kilo Echo 2, Charlie Alpha Bravo, testing.
Okay, testing. Anything else you want tonight?
How does it sound? Clear now, this is Kilo Echo 2, Charlie Alpha Bravo.
Yeah, you're not full quieting. It's about 30% background noise, but you're readable.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Anyway, Rich, you know, you have to be a little concerned about the length of your transmission line, although since you're operating portable, it's not going to be that long, I would assume. So that shouldn't be a significant problem. But once again, we wish you luck. We hope you figure it out, and we hope you come back and tell us exactly what works for you.
I will definitely report back. And talking about signal reports, how quieting am I, Roy, going into the repeater?
There's a very strange crackle in the background. I can't make out whether it's coming from your mic input or just because you're not 100% capturing the repeater. But it's not anything like the quality of the other gentleman. So I'm thinking maybe it's just background noises, possibly.
No, I noticed on the middle island there is that crackling type of sound. I won't do it now, but if I switch to Selden, it'll probably not be there. But it may be in my radio because I still haven't solved that Boston ATC problem when I cut off that amount of, when I cut off a certain amount of coax and lost Boston for some reason. So I don't know, but as long as I'm readable and would you say I'm 80% quieting?
Yeah. Again, it's a different quality than the usual fine scattered hiss of a repeater that hasn't completely locked onto a signal. But it's very readable. I don't have to kind of concentrate to do anything. I just understand what you say.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for weighing in, and I'll be reporting back.
Okie doke. Look forward to it. This is AC2GS, and curious if there's anyone else out there who wants to put their name on the list for tonight. Please hit that push to talk. Give me your call sign and your first name.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf, Sam.
Oh, hello, Sam. You have a question for tonight?
No, I figured everything out already. Thank you.
I'm glad you found the solution. Thanks for checking in. Once again, this continues to be AC2GS, and curious if anyone else would want to put their name on our little list of questions and topics and discussion. There'll always be some free time, but the earlier you put your name down, the more likely we'll get to you before we run out of time. So if there's anyone who remains who hasn't gotten his name on the list, please hit that push to talk and let me know.
KC2, Mike Delta Papa.
This is KD2, GCU.